All boats are aligned. Attention.
Welcome back to the Weigh Enough podcast with Short and Snarky Rowing. We're your host and ringmasters. We are the Short and Snarky Coxswains. You've seen us on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. I'm Sam, and as always, I am joined by my co-host, Kate.
Thanks for tuning into this week's episode. And if you've not picked up your copy of the Short and Snarky Guide to Rowing and Coxing, we are on Amazon. You can also check us out on social media. So today we've got the privilege of interviewing one of our local favorites, regatta master and former Yale rower, Jake Poignier. And we're going to talk a little bit about our top story today.
Our top story, I have to say this one is very interesting. It got me by the title. It is called, I Broke World Rowing Records While in Jail. I know you guys are going to have a lot of questions. It is 26-year-old John McAvoy who is serving a life sentence in prison for a conspiracy to commit armed robbery, a minimum of 5 years that he had to serve. It's his second time in prison. And he said that he was not remorseful, and he was even thinking about breaking out of prison, but instead, he turned to erging.
Right. So this guy's locked up for life in a British prison, Nottinghamshire. It sounds like
it's super
sort of
British.
A bleak place, but yes, also very British. And he decided, I guess he was discovered by a local physical education instructor in prison.
Yeah, and it said he said that he wanted to spend less time in his cell, so he escaped his cell to go erg.
Right, so I guess, it's from what it sounds like in the article, the PE instructor gave him a list of all the world rowing records, and he set out to break them.
Yeah, it sounds like that this guy said that he had a talent for rowing. And he, without the prisoner's blessing, Googled all of these, world records. And they were like, yeah, you can totally break these records. One of them, Kate, being that he, this first one that he sent in 2009, 24 hours, he rode 163 miles.
So I worked that out. That is 262,303 meters in 24 hours.
I have a hard enough time waking up in the morning.
Do you think he stopped during that time?
I don't know, but his butt had to be really, really sore.
I can't even imagine. The picture in the article, he looks pretty buff to me, but
yeah, and it looks like this is relatively recent because he says he's at over 30, so he doesn't want to become a world-class rower, but he wants to turn his attention to just training and becoming a professional sportsman. My favorite quote inside of this article is, the respect I craved as a criminal was being earned instead as a sportsman. So, all of you Short and Snarkians out there, you can create a better profile and personality and, get respect by erging rather than by committing crimes.
Right.
So stay on the ergs, folks, as much as we hate them.
Yeah, and I just have to wonder, prison is probably what could turn me into erging 2,000 meters in an hour.
Yeah.
No, I'm sorry, 200,000 meters in 24 hours.
That's too much.
It's staggering.
That's too much. I can't do it.
Yeah. So,
all right.
Anyway, my favorite part of the article, he lived off porridge and nuts.
And tuna. Don't forget tuna.
But
he bought all that stuff, so he didn't eat the slop in prison.
Yeah, well, he's going to be locked up for a long time, so I don't think he's going to be on a river near you anytime soon.
No, absolutely not. He will not be in competition with any of us.
All right. Cool. So let's get Jake on the phone.
Former
Yale rower and one of our officials here in Arizona.
Right. So stay on the ergs, folks, as much as we hate them.
Yeah, and I just have to wonder, prison is probably what could turn me into erging 2,000 meters in an hour.
Yeah.
No, I'm sorry, 200,000 meters in 24 hours.
That's too much.
It's staggering.
That's too much. I can't do it.
Yeah. So.
All right.
Anyway, my favorite part of the article, he lived off porridge and nuts.
And tuna. Don't forget tuna. But he bought all that stuff, so he didn't eat the slop in prison.
Yeah, well, he's going to be locked up for a long time, so I don't think he's going to be on a river near you anytime soon.
No, absolutely not. He will not be in competition with any of us.
All right. Cool. So let's get Jake on the phone.
Absolutely. Let's get Jake on the
phone. Former Yale rower and one of our officials here in Arizona.
Hi, Jake. You're on with Sam and Kate with Short and Snarky. How are you today?
I'm doing great. How are you guys?
Good, thank you. So thanks for joining us today, Jake. We have kind of briefly brought people up to speed on what your background is, but nobody tells your story better than you do. So if you could go ahead and tell us about your background, like how'd you get started in rowing?
Sure. It was back in the 1900s, of course. In high school, I basically got kind of frustrated and ticked off at being on the golf team, and I had a good buddy that was really into rowing. And so I thought, you know what, I'll give that a try. I like the water. I grew up in boats and figured that would be a good match. And I basically was hooked from then on. So I rowed my senior year in high school and then for 4 years at Yale. It was what kept me in school. Don't tell my mom that. It was a seriously rewarding part of my collegiate career, and then subsequent to that, I wrote a little bit after graduation, then took, I guess, something like a 12-year hiatus by the time that Tempe Town Lake got flooded, and started rowing and coaching like beginners classes there, and again kind of got rehooked on it. And at a certain point in time, I figured out that there was no way that I could continue to both row and coach. It was just too much time, and so I thought, you know what, I'm gonna do the coaching thing. And from there, as I recall, what happened was that there were just a bunch of juniors that ended up taking learn to row classes, and I thought, you know what, let's turn this into a program. And so that's kind of where that got started. And from there, ended up coaching with the juniors at Tempe Town Lake for a couple of years, and again took hiatus when I moved to Canada for a year. When I came back from Canada, got contacted by the folks at the Tempe Rowers Association and started helping out with regattas. So that's kind of the quick Reader's Digest version.
Wow. And you said that you had rowed at Yale. Can you tell us about the Harvard-Yale regatta and like that whole rivalry? Because, I mean, that's pretty...
Yeah, so I rowed lightweight. So we have a very serious rivalry, obviously, with Harvard and with Princeton. I didn't ever row in the Harvard-Yale race because that's heavyweights.
Right.
But my senior year, we went, the lightweights went and trained with the heavyweights at Gales Ferry, which is where the Harvard-Yale race takes place. So we did some serious training with them before nationals, and trying to help them get their speed up, trying to help us get our speed up. And so that was kind of a cool thing.
That's really cool.
Yeah, that's
yeah,
great.
It's serious old school, like saltwater showers. and it was pretty awesome. You know, it's basically like being back at camp.
Yeah, oh, wow. It's pretty amazing. It's I watched that 60 Minutes with Harry Parker. If you haven't seen that, that is fantastic. But they have a lot of footage from Gales Ferry, and they've got the insides of the buildings, and it really is like a summer camp atmosphere. It looks like a really cool place, and it sounds like it's closed up for the rest of the year, and it's just open for those 2 weeks.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. It's open for that little period of time, and it serves a pretty cool purpose. I guess it's too bad that it doesn't get more use, but on the other hand, there's a lot of history behind it.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
So, you know, that... We certainly, got a lot out of that. You know, it was just a really, you feel, you know, you feel how old the building is, and you realize how many people have come before you and the traditions that go on. Back then, our heavyweights were not very fast, unfortunately, and now they're really fast.
Yeah.
So I think that, if I recall correctly, last year was the first time they'd won in quite a while. Mm-hmm. You know, so that, that's kind of, it's nice to see that that program has come up to speed. And it was, yeah, we're all good friends. We just happen to be a lot smaller.
Oh, wow. Well, that sounds great. Speaking of history, you've been part of planning the local regattas that take place here in Tempe, one of them being Desert Sprints. So one of our questions is, what goes into planning a regatta? What makes a good regatta? And, just stuff like that.
Yeah, so we start having meetings as a group maybe 4 or 5 months in advance. And basically we'll meet every other week for a couple months, and then as the regatta gets closer, it's pretty much a weekly thing. There are tons of great people on the Tempe Rowers Association, the permanent people on the board, as well as we get a lot of participation from coaches and representatives from other clubs, and it's a real collaborative effort. And eventually what happens is people find their niche.
Mm-hmm.
And there's one guy who's really good at details, so he's the perfect guy to keep the list of equipment and
yeah.
all the different, you know, we need 15 chairs here and 6 tables there, and we need this number of tents and all that stuff. If I were in charge of that, the regatta wouldn't happen because I would forget everything.
What do you need chairs for?
Yeah, exactly. Just sit on the ground.
Yeah, you're fine.
Yeah, no problem. Just wear sunscreen. Don't worry about a tent. But, so a lot of planning goes into it, and it's, the thing is now we've been doing it for so many years that you're not recreating the wheel every time. It's trying to kind of go, okay, what did you do last year that worked? What did you do last year that you can improve? So it's really, now it's, you know, most of the stuff is kind of, is set as far as, okay, these are the processes and procedures that need to happen, and who's taking charge of this. It's always a challenge to get volunteers, so
right.
If there are any folks out there that are listening that want to volunteer, that's a huge help, because it does require, you know, not just the people that are helping organize the regatta, but on regatta day, it requires a lot of bodies to be able to put things on. I mean, you've got 6 launches on the water. You've got all these people that need to man various places on the lake. And, so there's, you know, it's logistically, it's, there are a lot of things that have to go on. But we've been doing it now long enough that I'm not going to say it's like a Swiss train, but it's close.
Right. And of course, you know, with anything, with any organization or any type of, thing like that, you want to make sure that you don't tell people that they're the chickens, because we need the eggs, that they're not, you know, we need the eggs. So you got to make sure to facilitate everybody's crazy.
Yes.
So Jake, yes. For somebody who, you know, an average rower that just goes to a regatta and doesn't really think much about the planning, what do you think people would be most surprised about that goes into planning the regatta?
I guess it's probably like any good event, that the better job we do, the less people notice anything. And that's true of probably weddings, bar mitzvahs, the less that anybody sees is going on, the more fun people are having, the better off we all are. I think it's really the enormous amount of, man hours that go in total in advance. And I mean, we also have the fall regatta, and that's not nearly as intense planning wise because there just aren't as many people.
Right.
It's not an all day event, but there's still a lot of man hours that go into it. Things like putting in the race course too. I mean, that requires, 6 or 8 people.
Oh yeah. I've hauled buoys before.
Yeah. Yeah.
What's that?
That's about the worst job ever.
We've hauled buoys before, yeah. We've both hauled buoys.
Yeah.
So So you would say that immense organization and just kind of teamwork, everybody kind of knowing where they're supposed to be and doing what they're supposed to be doing, would that be what you would say makes a good regatta, that it seems seamless?
Yeah, that it seems seamless, that everybody knows what they're supposed to do, and you know, that they've got control of whatever circumstance. And the more experience that given people have running a particular thing, the better that they can do it. You know, like Steve running the dock. I mean, he's been the dock master for years now.
Oh, he's so amazing. Yeah,
he's got that down pat. Kathy, as the sort of the spearhead of everything. I mean, she's just got a really good overall perspective of, okay, these are the things that need to happen. Here's what people need to do. You know, she's really sharp at all those. And I could go down the list of all the different people that are like that. But I mean, that's really
right.
Kind of, you know, having people that can make decisions quickly. Because yeah. A lot of times it's like, okay, this didn't go correct. You know, we've got to figure out, you know, what do we need to do to make this work now. Like last year when one of the stake boats got cut loose by a boat propeller. Like,
oh,
okay,
my gosh.
You know, that's a situational thing. You can't plan for it. But
nope.
What do you do? It's like,
yeah.
Okay, so, you know, instantly go over to the floating start. What can you do to get the boat reattached to its moorings? That type of thing. So, you know, there are certain, and that kind of, you know, I don't know whether you qualify that as fun, but I mean, it does make it exciting when you've got something that suddenly goes sideways on you and,
yeah.
And you need to figure out what's the solution to make this.
Keeps you on your toes.
Yeah.
So more frequently, Jake, I find you at the finish line at the regattas, and you're always sitting in that wonderful tent with, you know, laptops and every, you know, and radios. I have a lot of questions about the finish line. Just what's the craziest thing that's happened at the finish line? Is it crazy and hectic? You know, a lot of photo finishes or?
Not a lot of photo finishes. I mean, I would say it's, you know, a couple minutes worth of twiddling your thumbs, and then it can be anything from, like, a boring finish to a, okay, we need to have four people with binoculars because this is going to be a close one, and, you know, it's going to be boom, 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 boom. So, you know, again, those types of things make it exciting, because if every race was 4 seconds between both, that's not terribly exciting. So it is,
right.
You know, it's fun. Do I want every race to be a photo finish? That would probably be stressful. But,
right.
You know, again, surrounding myself with really good people who are, you know, everybody knows their job. So, you know, one person is spotting them from a distance so we can figure out what the bow numbers are. One person has got the flag. One person has got the stopwatch. All of those little pieces need to fall into place, and as long as everybody's focused on what their particular job is, everything runs smoothly. And so, you know, it's been a learning curve. I've been doing it a couple of years now.
Yeah.
And finally, now I feel like, you know, it's I don't worry about it as much.
Right.
The goofy one is the fall regatta, because when we've got all the different types of boats,
oh.
So you've got the, you know, you've got rowing shells, plus you've got dragon boats, kayaks.
Stand-up paddlers.
The paddlers, all those different things. The challenge there is because all those boats move different speeds.
Yep.
And so as four or five different boats of four or five different types are all coming toward the finish line, you can't tell who's going to, I mean, yes, the rowing shell is going to be the fastest, but some of the other ones, it's you really can't tell. So you really have to be, you know, that's a pretty anxious situation, because the different boat types just have such different speeds and they move differently through the water. I mean, a rowing shell, you can kind of tell when they're passing the 250. It's like, okay,
oh, yeah.
I've got an idea of what the order of finish is going to be. And so it's just a question of, is it, you know, 2-3-5 or is it 2-5-3.
Right.
You know, and you sort of have it in your head, okay, this is what we're going to expect. And then as soon as they hit the line, you need to make your decision.
Right. And then the last couple of questions that we have here, what would you say is your most embarrassing rowing or coaching moment?
Well, I don't embarrass easily, so that's a tough one.
That's always tough.
I think...
It doesn't have to have happened to you. It could have happened, like, something you've seen.
Oh, geez. Well, no, I'm not going to call somebody else out. I'll do myself here.
Come on.
I actually ran into my college coach at... Yale was here last weekend for a hockey game.
Okay.
And my coach is a huge... huge hockey fan, and so I ran into him at Gila River, at Gila River Arena.
Yeah.
And Gila, so I ran into him at the hockey game. We were swapping stories and stuff like that. One of the stories that I remember pretty vividly, and I think I was a junior, and I was just having a bad day out there, and my coach was kind of a screamer, and he said something to the effect of, "Poignet, if you keep rolling that way, your next seat isn't in the 3V, it's in the 4V, or something along those lines. So that was a serious gut punch, hearing that, because I was either in the varsity or the JV at the time. So that was, he was threatening me basically getting bounced to the netherworld.
Just because you were having a bad day.
Yeah, I was having a bad day. I would say that's probably the most embarrassing.
Oh, that's
the one I most vividly remember, where it's like, hey, you need to get your act together.
Uh-huh.
Like you need to focus every single day. You need to, I probably wasn't taking it easy.
No,
I'm sure I was probably pressing and not rowing well. I was probably flailing. Yeah, would be my guess.
That happens. Bad days happen.
Yeah, so that was the embarrassing rowing. The worst thing I ever did as a coach, the dumbest thing, was when I insulted a rower by comparing him to somebody else.
Oh, okay.
And I said, hey, so-and-so, you're rowing like so-and-so. And that was really dumb.
It was not
well received by any party, and I had reached a frustration level that I should have kept bottled up, and I didn't, and so it's one of those things that this is many years ago, and I still think about it. Same as the point that you're going to end up in the 4V.
Yeah, but so you would say that the most embarrassing is not when you heard the cops driving over on the bridge saying that they were all going to pull us over because we were rushing up the slide?
That wasn't embarrassing at all.
You're right. It was awesome.
that was one of my proudest moments. Sorry.
Yeah, that was... Okay, that's a proud moment. And then just last question is, do you still have all of your medals? And if so, where do you keep them?
The only medals that I have are from winning Eastern Sprints 1989 and winning San Diego Crew Classic 1988 and 89, and then from Southwest Regionals Masters 4. And I don't know what year that was, but that was really fun I don't know what we expected, but the fact that we won was awesome.
That's awesome.
And our coach, Tom Gallagher, literally came, like, swimming out to the boat at Lake Natoma. He was so happy. He was, like, splashing around in the water. we were going nuts. That was really fun.
That is fun.
So those are the only four that I have.
Oh, awesome. Well, thanks so much. I feel like I know so much about all of, planning a regatta and... everything about you. So thanks so much for being on. We really appreciate your time.
Thanks, Jay.
Well, I appreciate your time as well. This was fun and brought back a lot of good memories.
All right. Well, I hope that you have a good day. Talk to you soon.
Thanks so much.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
Well, it was really great to have Jake on. What I mostly liked hearing was that, everybody's an integral part of the regatta. Like, for it to run smoothly, everybody kind of has to just do their job, and that some people are saying, like, oh, I'm really good at organization, or I have a really good eye for detail, or I don't mind putting buoys in the whatever. I really enjoyed hearing how to put together a regatta.
Well, I really liked hearing about the finish line. I mean, that to me is one of the points in the race. It's kind of a black box to me because when you're rowing or you're coxing in a race, it really goes by in a blur. That seems to be like time is moving. If you're rowing, time is moving in a standstill.
Oh, yeah.
And when you're coxing, time is moving at warp speed. It's 10 times faster. So
yeah, and it must be hard for them, you know, just without the, not that there is that many photo finishes out here in Arizona, but just kind of the photo finish aspect of it, because like, I mean, when you're in the seat and you're sitting there and you're like, there's no way, dude, we totally beat them. That must be a hard thing for them to have to rule on.
Yeah. Well, have you ever been involved in a photo finish?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. What happened?
Well, we won by a bow ball. My boat did, and I almost fell over because I was so excited.
And I've been in one. Well, I've actually been in both sides where we finished second and then also where we won. But
either way, very
you
humble.
You know, it's hard when you're a coxswain, too, because your boat asks, did we win? And you can't tell them.
Yeah, you have no idea. You're just like, I don't know, but please don't yell at me.
Well, great. Well, good episode today.
Excellent.
Again, we are the Short and Snarky Coxswains. You can follow us on social media. We're on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. And if you haven't picked up a copy of our book, The Short and Snarky Guide to Coxing and Rowing, we're on Amazon. Check us out.
All right. Well, thanks for tuning in, guys, and we'll see you next week.
Last two strokes. That's what... two, way enough, let it run, blades down.